We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Audacy put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Audacy. Visit ads.audacy.com.
Back here on Sports Talk on the Big 870, Mike Dottiglia, along with the Cajun Cannon, Bobby Hebert, Deuce McAllister, and on the Oakland Heart Jewelers talking text line, Ben Rothenberg, a host of the No Challenges Remaining podcast, covers the tennis circuit, and Bobby's been waiting all day to talk to you, Ben, so thanks so much for joining us this afternoon.
Yeah,
thanks
for coming on, Ben, and you look at it Boy, I was kind of impressed. You look at the Australian Open, a lot of young, up-and-coming Americans who maybe we're not familiar with. There was Battle of Americans. You look at the quarterfinals and going forward, and that we haven't really seen this when you look at the Australian Open semifinals since 2009, since Andy Roddick. I mean, what's your take and where we at with as far as players? You know, I think we love the sport. If a lot of players representing our country, well, what's your take on that?
No, absolutely. This is a big tournament for a lot of the American guys showing up and a lot of the sort of depth guys who weren't really the ones being most talked about. I mean, the number one American right now is Taylor Fritz, who's in the top 10. Francis Tiafoe is number two. He made the U.S. Open semifinals last year, and neither of those guys were in this group of three people who had three Americans in the eight guys in the quarterfinals. So that was a big breakthrough for just showing the depth of American men's tennis right now. And that's kind of been the case a little bit. It's been a little bit of sort of quantity over quality, but now a lot of that quantity that we're having in like the top 50 of the rankings is bearing out pretty deep in the biggest tournament. So it's definitely positive signs for the future.
Now, Ben, pardon the pun, but look at Ben, you know, going against Tommy Paul, but Ben Shelton, I mean, coming out of nowhere, he hadn't even left the country. He's just 20 years of age. Less than a year after winning the NCAA title at University of Florida, all of a sudden he's traveling outside the United States for the first time, participating in his second Grand Slam tournament. So what do you think the prospects with Ben Shelton and maybe like a Tommy Paul going forward?
Yeah, really good. I think Ben Shelton's someone who's been on the American tennis radar a bit because, you know, we follow the NCAA tennis and he's won two of those titles. But outside of the U.S., people had not heard of him really at all. He hadn't left the U.S. ever. And tennis is obviously a very international sport the way the tour is set up. So he impressed a lot of people. He's got a lot of game. He's a big, tall, strong guy, lefty, which is a big advantage in tennis. Gets a different sort of spin to the shot. It's going to throw people off. And, yeah, he's been really, really impressive to see so far, and definitely someone with a big upside. And he's making a quarterfinal in Australia. I think it's definitely ahead of schedule where people thought he would be. But it's not a surprise to do it at some point in his career. So he's gotten off to a very strong start in his first trip outside the U.S. And he'll take some growing pains getting used to, you know, the travels of the tour and all the different time zones and stuff. It's a different sort of challenge and lifestyle he'll have to adjust to. But the game is absolutely there, and he showed that really well this week.
Now, Ben, what is your take? And I think, my opinion, I think he's going to take advantage of his opportunity at being Djokovic. You look at Roger Federer retiring. You look at Nadal, the injuries that he's dealing with. And then I look at Djokovic. We all know about the vaccine and dealing with Australia, but he's back in the country.
Yeah.
What he's won his past, 11 sets and dropped a total. I was reading about like a total of 27 games in that span. He's chasing, my understanding, his 10th championship at Melbourne. So what is your take? I mean, when all said and done, will Djokovic be the greatest of all time? I mean, when you consider...
He's in that conversation.
Because you look at the winning streak at the Australian Open with 26 matches. That's equaling, my understanding, maybe Andre Agassi for the longest run there in the Open era. So what did you take? Now, some people like the serve. They like the serve or they don't like him. I mean, I don't know.
Yeah,
he wins.
It's the greatest. Yeah. He wins a lot for sure, and he's in the greatest conversation, absolutely, and he's absolutely,
no question.
I think, probably almost certainly going to be winning that sort of debate purely on a number stats basis, right? Like that's where he's going to run.
Yeah,
where he's going for his 22nd Grand Slam title, Grand Slam singles title in the final against Tsitsipas. That would tie him for most ever among the men at 22, one behind Serena at 23. It shows the kind of level that, you know, she's still at above all those guys. He's absolutely there. And I think, you know, where he loses points in the debate is sort of on all the controversy it's generated and not sort of being the bringing the popularity or the sort of spirit that people like Federer and Nadal have brought. And that's sort of where he gets his knocks. But purely on the paper and on lifting trophies, he's as good or better than anybody has ever been.
Now, Ben, going back to America, United States, and boy, and I think you look at McEnroe, you look at Jimmy Connors and all that, you look at Andy Roddick, the last man from the U.S. to win a Grand Slam singles tournament at the U.S. Open. That was 20 years ago. But all of a sudden, I look at a number of American players that are making it like to the quarterfinals. Then all of a sudden, you look quarterfinals, semifinals, maybe the finals. I mean, what do you look for the next decade with American players going forward, maybe representing? And it's not going to be a lull like we had so long since Andy Roddick.
Ben, well, yeah. I'll piggyback off what Bob was saying. Sure. I read an article about with IMG, and, you know, that was a place at one time everybody went to. And now that's sort of revitalized again. And they have people at IMG saying that they have a group of young 14, 15, 16-year-olds that they think may be the best that's ever passed through IMG. So, man, if that's true, then you've got really something for the next 10, 12 years.
Yeah, there's kids like that all over the world, and it's a really global sport. That's made it so tough for Americans a lot of times.
Yeah.
The map has gotten a lot bigger for tennis in all these different countries. You know, like the best tennis player we're just talking about is Serbian, you know, from Djokovic, and that wasn't a country that was so much on the tennis map in the days of, you know, Agassi, Sampras, McEnroe, all those guys he named. So it's been tougher for sure, and this is a really meaningfully long drought for American men's tennis. I mean, it'll be 20 years in September since Andy Roddick won the last American man Grand Slam title, and that's an incredibly long drought. And I don't think that's going to keep going much longer. I do think we're on the tail end of that. I do think within the next 2-3 years, maybe even to be a little bit conservative, like I think that there's going to be somebody breaking through. There's just so many numbers of people coming, and also the guys who have really had the stranglehold on the sport, Federer, Nadal, Djokovic, are getting older and, you know, fading away from the game. Even if Djokovic is still obviously a big favorite to win this title, he's only getting older. He's, you know, turned 36 this year, and he's going to be on the bit of the downslope of his career eventually. So there will be opportunities, and I do think Americans are well positioned just purely with the numbers of talented sort of top 20 caliber guys they have to be very much in the fighting for those prizes once they get the upper grabs again.
Ben, I got a text about to talk a little bit about the women's game and your thoughts on the younger generation of women's tennis players from the United States and the impact they could potentially have.
Yeah, but you're competing with the world. And,
you are competing.
And you say you might want the Americans to women not so fast.
Yeah, no, it's definitely like it's not dissimilar than the men, really. I mean, the women, especially a lot of Eastern
European. It's similar,
women,
so what you're saying.
Yeah,
it's come up. They've come up, and the women have had haven't had anywhere near the drought the men have had. I mean, because the Williams sisters are there flying the flag all through, you know, the last 20 years pretty much and winning lots of titles and keeping American women up there. And then also there are several other women who also won Grand Slam titles around then. Most recently was in 2020 for the women at the Australian Open, so not that long a drought at all compared to the men. But still, you know, it's still a tough ball game out there. And I think the main prospect from the young American women for sure is Coco Gauff, who is still only 18 years old. She made her debut at Wimbledon in 2019. She was just 15, beat Venus Williams in the first round. I realize a lot of road ahead of her. You know, she hasn't made it to a Grand Slam semifinal or final yet, so I'm sure she's getting a little impatient just because she's been in the conversation for so long. But she's got a really bright future ahead of her and in the top 10 already, and it's someone who should be absolutely looked at as being a real meaningful force. And then there's a lot of other players for sure coming up in the teams. And in women's game, there hasn't really been the same sort of learning curve there has been on the men's side where, you know, guys aren't breaking through till like their mid-20s now, it seems like. Women's side, it's still possible for even a teenager or, you know, someone in their early 20s to come relatively out of nowhere and break pretty quickly to win a title.
And you know what's crazy, Ben? Where do you represent? And I'm like thinking Kazakhstan. She don't look like Kazakhstan. That could be correct. Maybe I thought that was Mongol territory. But I'm looking, okay, she was born in Moscow. And then Kazakhstan going to represent her and give her, I guess, a bunch of money and all that. So she's playing for that country. So we might see more of that. All of a sudden, Belarus, Kazakhstan, whatever might come about. All of a sudden, it's like, whoa, Kazakhstan to even have a tennis court? I didn't even know that. I'm thinking like to think of, that's not far fetched. Am I outrageous thinking that?
No, that's actually a really good
that out.
That's a really good observation. Actually, I'm impressed you picked up on that. Yeah, because Kazakhstan has had a program for about 10-15 years now where they're paying some of these sort of lower-ranked Russian players, almost all Russians, to switch their affiliation from Russia to Kazakhstan in order to really put Kazakhstan on the map and get, you know, Kazakhstan's not getting mentioned on the radio in New Orleans without having tennis players in the finals.
Not much. So
I know it because I love history and I caught that. I go, what? She don't like, okay, she's from Moscow, I understand that, and the Soviet Union and all that. Okay, that's why Kazakhstan took care of her. I mean, I even see the crowd that's cheering for her. They look like Mongols. I mean, it's like Mongolia. I mean, it's the whole area. Because I know history. I know territories. Yeah. And when I see her, she's a stud and representing Kazakhstan.
Yeah, there's actually one or two ethnic Kazakh players that they do have who are more homegrown talent. But the majority of the Kazakh players who are coming up are these Russians who they were able to lure over with the promise of funding their careers. You know, giving them resources that the Russian Federation wasn't giving them. And it's been a big boon for the Kazakh Federation. And it's also helped out. You were talking about Rybakina, who's the player who's in the Australian Open Final Women's side, won Wimbledon last year. And, and it's helped her career, too. It's been a good deal for both sides, really, because she wasn't getting the attention or the coaching support or things like that from the Russian Federation, which is pretty disorganized and kind of big and overlooked her. But Kazakhstan's been ready for her, and she's, you know, made some history under their flag. And it's also helped her because there's all these bans about, you know, Russian athletes competing now and taking away their flags and stuff. So she's sort of found a safe harbor from that under this Kazakh flag.
Well, I can tell you what, a stud girl that beat Coco from Latvia. I mean, if I get in the fight, I want her on my side. I mean, she was a stud.
She can take care of herself.
Oh, good. Strong. I'm like, I'm looking at her. We want Coco to win, but I was like, it's maybe not as powerful. I mean, you got to play on the court. You got to win. But I was impressed, and I'm looking at, like, whether, you know, you look at the Baltic states, whether it's Latvia, Estonia, whatever, and all that. So it's amazing now where tennis is at, that if you truly want to play and you have ability, that it's almost like the NFL and the combine, they'll find you wherever you're at. You're not going to disappear. You have an opportunity if you're playing at a high level.
This is more like the NBA, though, isn't it?
Yeah, international.
Because it's international.
Yeah.
How that's went.
No, absolutely. It's a lot like the NBA. NBA, I think, is the best analogy for the American sports. Like, it's just kind of more and more global. The resources it takes to develop a player, you know, NBA, all you really need is a ball and a hoop somewhere. And you can play anywhere in the world and develop that talent. Tennis is, you know, a little bit more expensive equipment sometimes with the courts and rackets and balls and stuff. But it's not, the barrier to entry is still pretty low, and there's courts all over the world. It just takes, you know, one parent with a dream of seeing their daughter or son be a champion someday to sort of have that tunnel vision, that mentality and that dream and that blueprint to follow. And these people can be champions, can be grown anywhere. It's not just, you know, you mentioned IMG. It's not just the sort of Florida academies anymore that can they can sprout up.
Because at one time, that
really
was it.
Anywhere.
It was really IMG. Everything.
Yeah, you look at Chris Evert and all that. Yes.
Passed through IMG. Ben, thanks so much for joining us this afternoon. We really appreciate it. We'll have you back soon. And thank you so much.
Thanks, Ben.
Thanks for having me, guys.
All right. Ben Rothenberg, who is the host of NCR/Tennis Podcast, senior editor at RacketMagazine.com. We'll be back with more sports talk here on the Big 870.
We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Odyssey put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Odyssey. Visit ads.odyssey.com.